Here's your money briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen at the Wall Street Journal in New York. Some states have found a way to cope with the skyrocketing cost of paying out retiree benefits. They've stopped paying them. We'll have details in a moment. First, these money and market stories you should know. The labor market keeps chugging along. The ADP payroll company reports the U.S. private sector added 275,000 jobs in April, and that's significantly higher than economists were expecting. 145,000 of those jobs were at companies classified as medium-sized, that is, between 50 and 500 employees. The service sector has contributed most of the new private sector jobs for the past few months. Employees hired in health and education and the professional and business services continue to add to gains in that sector. And the group Feeding America says in 97% of counties in the U.S., there are people who cannot afford or do not have access to healthy food. The report says about 12.5 million children in the U.S. are in that category, and 750,000 of them live in New York City and Los Angeles. But from a county standpoint, in Jefferson County, Mississippi, about 35% of people are what the report calls food insecure. That's the highest in the nation, while Steele County, North Dakota, has the lowest at 3%. Nationwide, the average cost of a meal in the U.S. in 2017 was $3.02, and that was down slightly from the year earlier. In the U.S., the cost of health care benefits to retirees is rising like many other financial commitments, and many states are taking a drastic and unexpected action. They've stopped paying. Wall Street Journal reporter Heather Gillers is on the line with us to discuss. So, Heather, I want to ask you about a few states in particular, but what kinds of numbers nationally are we talking about?
The gap, that is the amount that states as a group are falling short of what they've promised to pay, is about $600 billion. So it's quite a lot of money.
Wow, that is a lot. Wow.
States made these promises largely in the second half of the 20th century when government was growing and budgets were a little more robust. And they didn't really put aside much money to pay for them. Instead, they generally just paid for retirees' healthcare benefits out of their annual budgets. What they may not have foreseen is the tremendous growth in the cost of medical care that we've seen over the past 10, 20, 30, 40 years. They also haven't benefited much from investment returns because, unlike pension funds, this money hasn't been saved up in a trust account. Instead, it's sort of built into the annual budget year after year. And as a result, these expenses can become quite burdensome.
So they're dealing with people living longer because of the progress of medicine and the cost of medicine on top of that. And then the recession in 2008, 2009, that seemed to knock a lot of states really down a couple of rungs on the ladder as well.
It certainly did. And we haven't seen the bounce back with governments that we've seen in other areas. So largely governments still... local governments and state governments still employ roughly the same amount of people that they did 10 years ago. While they're seeing some revenues pick up, there really hasn't been as much of a recovery in the public sector as there has been elsewhere. And so you see states and cities looking to places where they can cut. And unlike pension liabilities, which are protected in many states by very strong court decisions, healthcare for retirees is not generally seen by courts as the same kind of right, as the same strongly protected, entitled benefit.
You shed a lot of light on North Carolina, and I want to ask you about those numbers, but you have a good quote in your story from North Carolina's treasurer, and he said about the issue, he said it's not emotional, it's not political, it's just simply mathematical.
As states are looking ahead and thinking about what they can afford to pay for and how much they're willing to raise revenues, you know, income taxes, fees, sales taxes, they are oftentimes seeing a mismatch between the revenues that they are willing to or feel capable of collecting and the expenses that they want to pay. And in retiree health benefits, they've found a place where they can cut. North Carolina has among the highest liabilities. Theirs comes to almost $30 billion. So you know, for a state, that's quite a lot of money to be looking at paying, and keeping that kind of liability on your balance sheet can have wide-ranging consequences. You know, North Carolina has a very good bond rating. They want to protect that bond rating in order to pay as little as possible when they borrow. Carrying around a $30 billion liability doesn't help you with something like that. At the same time, you're often seeing a backlash from these types of cuts. Healthcare in retirement, you know, and healthcare provided by a state government tends to be better than what Medicare has to offer. It can happen at much earlier ages. Medicare starts at 65. Retiree healthcare that state governments and city governments offer can start at 50 or 55. And in professions like police work, like fire, like corrections, you're really asking people to put themselves in danger in the public service, and the idea that they're going to get decent health care in retirement may be one of the things attracting them to that job. So for this story, I talked to an assistant superintendent of corrections in North Carolina who currently has a 30% vacancy rate for correction officers in the facility where he works, and is very concerned that when North Carolina stops offering retiree health benefits to state workers in 2021, he will have an even harder time recruiting people to be corrections officers.
And then you have a state like Kansas that's taken a very aggressive action to try to balance their books.
That's right. So Kansas, whereas North Carolina said, if you're hired after 2021, you can't have this benefit. In other words, North Carolina is going to stop offering this benefit for new employees hired after a certain date. Kansas more or less ended it immediately for everyone, including people who are already retired. You know, people who may have factored this into the mathematical calculations they made when they made the decision to retire. So what's happening in Kansas is they haven't eliminated the plan altogether, but what they've said is, we, the state of Kansas, are not going to pay a penny for retirees to be on this plan. So if you retirees want to keep receiving health care through the state of Kansas, you need to pay the entire premium, which could be as much as $1,000. After that decision was made, 3/4 of the 2,000 retirees who were on the state health plan left. So the number of retirees on the state health plan dropped in the space of 1 or 2 years from 2,000 to 500.
And I was amazed at the fall of the financial liability of Kansas as a result of that.
This decision that Kansas made was quite effective in reducing the state's liability. In 2016, Kansas had a little more than $6 million less than what it needed to pay for health care benefits for retirees. Now that gap is only about $500,000.
And there's also something at work here, and that's new accounting rules that are forcing states to reveal their liabilities. They can't try to manage this, you know, in dark rooms. They have to put this out in the open.
One of the sort of behind the scenes nudges that states have been getting in terms of coming to terms with these liabilities is coming from something called the Governmental Accounting Standards Board. And that's a body that sets the guidelines that states and cities generally follow when they report their finances every year. And a little more than 10 years ago, the Governmental Accounting Standards Board said, you have to add up how much these are going to cost, these benefits are going to cost over time. You can't just say we're paying X this year. You have to start thinking about how much are you going to owe, you know, next year and the year after. Then they made another change last year where cities and states had to start reporting those liabilities much more prominently. They had to start reporting them on their actual balance sheets, not just sticking them in a footnote somewhere on their annual report. And as that started happening, you started to hear a lot more public conversations about these numbers.
All right, so the public getting more involved and taxpayer dollars are involved here, so perhaps this will help the states to resolve the issue. And that's Wall Street Journal reporter Heather Gillers on the line with us. Heather, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me.
And that's your Money Briefing. I'm J.R. Whalen in New York for the Wall Street Journal.